And these clients are the most vulnerable, and they're the easiest to take advantage of. These are the clients that really shouldn't own commercial real estate.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. Weekly, we share interviews with real estate experts tapping into their experience and knowledge. Thanks for joining us this week. This is episode number 56. My name is J. Darren Gross, and we are so glad you're here. In just a minute, we're going to speak with Doug Marshall. Doug's a commercial real estate mortgage broker and the owner of Marshall Commercial Funding. Doug's been in commercial real estate funding for more than 25 years and is exceptionally knowledgeable. I always find him engaging, and I'm sure you will too. This week, we discuss the four different commercial real estate client types, the wise, the wicked, the simple, and for lack of a better word, the fool, and the nuances of each. We discuss the opportunities to learn from these clients and also the challenges it can be to work with a client that's not willing to work with you. But before we do get into the show, I want to invite you to subscribe if you like what we're doing. You can do that either on iTunes or Stitcher, whichever you prefer. It's easy. You just go to either one of your the Stitcher or the iTunes, and in the search bar, type in Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. And when you see our logo, it's the headphones with the CREPN between the ears. Go ahead and click subscribe, and this will ensure that you receive each new episode, and you can listen anytime you choose. And if you haven't subscribed to any podcast yet, I'd love for you to make us your first. Certainly once you do, you'll find there's a whole new world out there of podcasts in addition to this one that you'll find. It's great. A couple of my favorite podcasts I'll give you, too, that you might consider. There's the Tim Ferriss Show. He's the author of the 4-Hour Workweek. There's also Joe Fairless. He's the host of the Best Ever Real Estate Investing Show. And he was also a guest on this show, episode number 52. One of the things I love about podcasting, I think you'll find too, is that you can listen to them anywhere, whether it be in the gym, while you're in the car, or one of my favorites, while I'm out walking the dog. I'll tell you too that you want to be careful. If you've not done this before, and you don't have your settings on your phone, you're not certain of them, you might check to make sure that it's not set on cellular download. I know I managed to burn through like a month's worth of data in about 3 days. And so just a little warning there. Be sure to, keep an eye on that. You can change it and you can just do it. You can download them while it's on Wi-Fi, download 3 or 4 shows, and they'll be there ready for you when you're out and want to listen, and that'll save you there. When you do subscribe, though, I would love to have you leave a comment. If you do, if you've listened to the show more than one episode, we'd love to hear what you think. And if you do, I'll be sure to mention you on the next show. For those of you that are new to the program, I am a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. I've been an insurance broker for over 25 years, and my primary clients are real estate professionals dealing in multifamily, retail, warehouse, office, and development. I'm also a real estate investor and have been for 20 years now. And it's because of this, I'm always looking for more information about real estate to share with you, the listener, on this podcast or from my own knowledge. And also so that I can better support my insurance clients. And that's how Commercial Real Estate Pro Network and CREPN Radio came about. The easiest way you can reach me if you do have any questions is you can go to jdarrengross.com, and I'll spell that for you. There's always a unique way I find people spelling my name, whether it's with the silent Q, as my father-in-law used to say. The letter J, DarrenGross.com. Or you can also reach me at commercialrealestatepronetwork.com, and in the contact us option you can find there, and send me an email. As I mentioned earlier, I'm an insurance broker, and insurance is a part of any real estate transaction. It's often one of those kind of forgotten things until you get down to the nitty-gritty. And I just want you to know that if you find yourself in a deal and you have any questions or if you, there's a problem, reach out to me. I'll do anything I can to help you, maybe to talk through something or give you some ideas on how to navigate, or if you, you know, you do want some number input, I can give you that too. But I want to share with you, there's a couple of things that have popped up here recently, specifically to deal with flood insurance. And for those of you who don't know, I think it was in 2012, but the National Flood Insurance Program, also referred to as NFIP, they've been working to re-underwrite the flood elevation maps. And recently I had a client, one was an apartment complex owner. They had a lender that was forcing the full building limits on a building that was in the complex that was near a creek, and the lowest floor was below the 100-year floodplain. And so anyway, they were faced with a significant additional expense, that affected their budget and their net operating income. And so heads up, there, if you have any properties like that, there are lenders that are out there forcing that issue, and something to think about. The other that I had here recently was I had a client that had had a property under contract, and the seller had no mortgage and had not, faced any requirements for flood insurance. But since the rewrite of the flood maps, the flood insurance program, they say if you don't have an elevation certificate, they assume the worst, that your building is actually underwater, for lack of a better word. And therefore, because of that situation, the rate for flood insurance is significantly higher than if you were able to demonstrate that it was clearly above the 100-year floodplain. Well, the cost, because there was no elevation certificate associated with the property, there's a cost involved to get the elevation certificate, and there's also the time it takes to get the survey completed in order to make a more accurate determination. But without that information, the insurance companies were only willing to offer the worst case scenario. And unfortunately, the selling broker was not happy to hear the information I had, because my client ultimately they killed the deal. But I put this out there, and I want to share this with you, because if you are a broker, or if you are a seller, if you have a building you're looking to sell and you believe it's in a flood zone, or you know it's in a flood zone, and you don't have an elevation certificate, it's going to come up and create an issue for you when you go to sell. And you can, avoid that situation and not derail the sale if you have that elevation certificate ahead of time. I would certainly think that if you're a selling broker and you had the opportunity to list a property, you certainly wouldn't want to learn when something was in contract that it's not going to happen because the information wasn't available and the buyer gets cold feet or leaves because they don't know what the numbers are. So anyway, I share that with you. A couple of situations. If you have any kind of similar situation, you have any commercial insurance questions, go ahead and get in touch with me. I can do what I can. I'll do everything I can to help you. And I mean that. I'll do that. One more thing before we get on to the show. If you're on LinkedIn, we have a real estate group. It's called Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. It's a great group of commercial real estate professionals. I encourage you to go check it out and check in daily. Like anything, if you join something and you're just a member, you're going to get just membership benefits. But if you get involved in the group and you, read the posts that people are making, you like them, comment, you create your own posts, you're going to find a lot more value. And then connect with the members offline. I'm continually finding some really unique and amazing people that are in the group, and encourage you to check that out. So anyway, that's all we have for the pre-show stuff here. Let's get on with the show. Here now is my interview with Doug Marshall.
Right now, I'm fortunate to be in the company with Doug Marshall. Doug Marshall is the owner and proprietor of Marshall Commercial Funding. And Doug, it's always good to be in your presence. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm good. Good to see you. We are going to get into a little bit of a conversation here about the different types of clients and specific to commercial real estate. But before we do that, if you could be so kind as to kind of remind our listeners a little bit about you and your practice.
Yes, Marshall Commercial Funding. I've been in business now for 13 years, and we provide financing on most types of commercial real estate, but specifically on apartments, office, retail, and industrial buildings. And there are other property types as well, but those are kind of the four main food groups, so to speak, that I focus my attention on. And we look for deals that where the loan size is $1 million to $10 million in general. We try to stay away from the lower, the smaller deals.
Perfect. All right. Well, today we are going to address kind of the topic of the different types of clients. And you pointed out to me and presented to me a kind of a four different case scenario. And with that, I'm going to let you introduce the first one, which end you'd like to start with.
Okay. Well, thank you. A while back, I was reading a book, which I would recommend everyone to read. It's called Why I Left Goldman Sachs. The author is Greg Smith, and in the book, he describes himself as not being very religious, but that he appreciates the traditions around the Jewish holidays, especially the Passover Seder. He particularly likes the part of the story discussing the reaction of the four sons to Passover. The first son is, they describe as the wise son. The second one is wicked. The third is simple. And the fourth is one who doesn't know what questions to ask. He then goes on to say that just as in ancient Egypt, it was told about the four sons, so too on Wall Street, there are four clients. And I thought about that for a while, and I said, you know, those four clients are also commercial real estate people as well. In fact, I believe that what he's proposing or what's been talked about is actually a universal truth. And by that, I mean for something to be a universal truth, it needs to transcend time and it needs to transcend all cultures. So the truth of the four sons or the four clients is as true today as it was 3,000 years ago and as true as it will be 3,000 years from now. And not only that, but these types of clients, or the four sons, transcend all cultures that have ever existed or will exist in the future. And so I find this is a fascinating type of analogy or a description of people and that I think is important to understand. So about half of my blog readers are clients, and the other half are commercial real estate professionals. So after each client description, I give my suggested response of how the commercial real estate professional can best serve this particular client. So the very first client is the wise client. And these are the ones we hope to have as our clients. And unfortunately for me, many of my clients fall into this category. They have excellent commercial real estate experience. They know the ropes, but they also respect what you bring to the table. They realize you are an important cog in the wheel, and they don't grumble about the fee that you earn. The wise client, really, the reason why I like, obviously everybody likes working for the wise client, but the wise client is somebody that you can actually learn from, because there are so many different nuances to commercial real estate, and you can see how they size up a loan or how they what factors make a particular purchase something that would be of value to them? What do they see in that particular deal that some other people are overlooking? What makes it important to them? And so you can follow along and you can kind of look over their shoulder, so to speak, and see, oh, they really value this. I hadn't thought about that before. And so I don't care if you've been in the business for 40 or 50 years. You can learn something new from the people that are in the business. And that's what I like about the wise client.
Does the wise client value the integrity of the provider more than the value of the certain, meaning if the rate you're providing or the counsel you're providing shades the deal in a way that might not work out as positively as maybe one of your competitors would they value your input?
Yeah, I think that the wise client is more likely to stay with a given provider that he's done business with, even if that provider can't provide the absolute best rates and terms, because they understand that it's more than just about rate. It's also about getting the deal done and getting it done in a timely fashion and getting it done in such a way that it's not difficult to do. And so many wise clients they're not the type that have to get the absolute best deal. They would rather everything went smoothly. And they also many times are in the kind of a win-win type of relationship. It's not a win-lose for them. They're the ones that, you know, if I am doing okay on this, I really don't care if the person I'm negotiating with, maybe the seller, gets something out of it as well. And so it isn't like it's I win, you lose type of proposition. And they do the same thing with their advisors. They see them as part of the team, and they have loyalty to those people.
I like that, because I see that even in my business, is that there are people that will go through the phone book or the internet or whatever, just shop at rate, and they don't value that input or the... I don't want to say that it's all about the relationship, but there is a relationship, and there is a relationship, and you know, and you perform, and they trust you based on your historical relationship and the way that you've dealt with them. So that's, like you said, that's the client we all seek to have, and have as many of those as we can. Nobody doesn't like the wise client, right?
That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
That's for sure. So the second client is the wicked client, and we've all had. Over the years, I know I've had several of these. The wicked client knowingly withholds adverse information from you about the property or about himself in order to get the best possible outcome for himself. And he has absolutely no problem cutting ethical corners if that's what it takes. He hopes that whatever he is hiding will stay hidden just long enough to get the deal done. So our response should be, when we find out that important tidbit of information that he was trying to withhold, we disclose it to the light of day. And to not to disclose it makes us a party to his deception. And our reputation is everything. And so if we get caught in this deceptive practice of withholding information that's adverse to our client, it reflects badly on us. So if it means we lose the transaction and or we lose the client, so be it. Whatever it takes to be able to go to bed at night and sleep well, that's the important thing. You don't want to have your reputation ruined by the wicked client.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, are those the ones that are clearly not relationship driven? I mean, do they keep a relationship? Because I run into this occasionally where you have somebody that they will constantly call and constantly have you go do the exercise, but they're not necessarily going to do the deal. They might get educated from you. And then that education they go and apply to the other guy and find out where you didn't like the answers they were given, so then they don't give those answers to the next guy and they get the deal done.
Right. That happens all the time. And you know, I've been in the business now for a long, long time, and you begin to get you know, your feelers go out, and you can kind of tell early on in the process that whether they're actually wanting to use your services or whether they're just trying to get information from you. And sometimes you get blindsided, but many times you don't. And you can tell pretty early on that they really don't have much of an interest in you personally. They're just trying to get information.
Do you find the size of the, I don't mean size, but for lack of a better word, we'll use the word size, meaning the experience and the portfolio base of the client, does it dictate where a client will fall as to whether they're the wise client or the wicked client, or is it
no? There really is no rhyme or reason. The net worth of a wise client versus a wicked or simple, it's all kind of random. At least I've not seen any distinction.
Any indicators you can point to where we can warn the rest of us so we know what we're looking for?
No, I wish I could. Yeah. It's kind of like learning through the school of hard knocks. You know, I have one right now on the wicked client that it's only affecting himself. And this particular client owns an apartment, and he does not disclose to everyone that he has laundry income. He just puts the laundry income into his pocket. And so here he is. It's an ethical corner that he has cut. He cut it a long time ago, and he's owned the property for 4 or 5 years. We do have statements that prove that, yes, they used to get about $16,000 worth of income back in 2011. And if you put a cap rate on that $16,000 of 5.25%, that's like shorting himself about $300,000 in value. So for pocketing $16,000 a year for the last few years, he has actually shortchanged himself on the value of his property by that income. And on a 5.25 cap, which is kind of what things are going at these days, it's roughly $300,000 in value that he's taking up, that he's not able to justify. And that's so short-sighted of him that he would do that. But that's what sometimes the wicked client will do. They will cut the ethical corner because they want the money. They want to have the thrill of victory or whatever with the IRS in this particular case. And yet, in the long run, he's actually affecting the value of his property.
Right. No, that's always the... There's some sort of a poetic justice, I think, sometimes, though, when the person that's trying to screw everybody else or trying to screw the system ends up getting screwed in the end.
And that's what's happening to him.
Yeah. But it's also unfortunate, too, that sometimes perhaps they don't understand the long-term effect of their decisions.
Right.
Especially when they go to market their property and they can't justify the laundry income, or they can't show that to get the additional value there. You know, as you say that, I got to ask you, in your business, I'm wondering, do you find that there's always somebody willing to jump in and you know, be the provider to that client?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no problem with that, especially on the commercial lending side of the business. There are a lot of people in my business that their reputation is not good. Let's put it that way. And they're willing to cut corners because it's a payday for them.
Right. Yeah, and I see that even in insurance world, where there's the one who's willing not to tell all the gory details, kind of forget a few of the facts, and I said, they come to light. And then if you don't know them, you don't present them, then you do look like the fool there. So
yep.
I got that one. So we've got the wise client and the wicked client. What do you draw up as the third type of client?
Well, the third type of client is the simple client. And the simple client thinks he knows more about commercial real estate than he actually does. He generally has an overinflated ego and as a rule he doesn't trust anyone's judgment but his own. He kind of considers himself God's gift to commercial real estate. And if left to his own ways, the outcome of the transaction will get done, but it will likely be a more painful process than it needs to be, and probably will have a less favorable outcome than if you would have taken your experienced counsel. I have one right now that's doing this to me. And actually, I'm not representing him. I'm representing the buyer. But the seller is trying to do some things where it's on an apartment, and there are 3 vacant units. And he wouldn't have any problem whatsoever getting them rented, but he doesn't want to spend the money to do it because it's going to benefit the buyer, not him. And it's going to cost a few thousand dollars to turn those units. Well, he doesn't understand that that also causes problems with the lender because the vacancy is higher than the market, and therefore the loan amount will go down or be affected by the higher vacancy. So we have to tell him, no, you need to get these turnovers completed and get them rented and occupied, or it's going to affect the loan amount for my buyer. And if that happens, he might just decide to go elsewhere because he's not going to get the loan amount that he needs. So it's a perfect example of the simple client. But our response in general to the simple client is to do this. It is our duty to protect the simple client from himself. We should vigorously give them our best counsel, even when they don't trust us or our advice. But ultimately, we leave the decision-making to him. As easy it would be to say, be a yes man for this particular individual, give them your best counsel, and even if they don't take it, they will deep down grudgingly admire that you weren't their sycophant. And I think of another example. A couple years back, I was talking to a simple client, and he said to me, you know, you're not a yes man. And I said, yeah, I'm not. I'm not a yes man. I'm trying to give you good counsel. And it was like the best compliment that I had received in months. And I received it from one of these types of clients. So that's the simple client.
That's nice that they're willing to listen, too. I mean, and you can give them the counsel and the truth, provide them the truth so they can make a decision that will not put them in harm's way.
And, yes, and they might not take it.
Yeah.
But at least you've done everything that you could do to give them the counsel that they need.
Right. So that's we got the wise client, the wicked client, the simple client. What's our fourth client?
The fourth client is the client who doesn't know what questions to ask. And these clients are the most vulnerable, and they're the easiest to take advantage of. These are the clients that really shouldn't own commercial real estate. They don't even know what questions to ask. This reminds me of one of my clients I had about 5 or 6 years ago. She was a recent widow whose husband, before he died, was the one who liked owning and managing commercial real estate. She was a passive investor, but now she had to make all the decisions on her own. So our response when we have a client like this is to guide them through the process and give them wise counsel and charge them a fair fee for our services. One definition of integrity is doing the right thing when no one is looking. With the vulnerable client, we show integrity when we treat them right, especially when they wouldn't realize it if we were taking advantage of them. So,
another
way of having the client who doesn't know what questions to ask is to get somebody who's the first time buyer.
Is that the client who doesn't know what to ask, or
yeah,
the simple client?
Yeah, it's the client who doesn't know what to ask is somebody who's, in my opinion, is clueless about commercial real estate, and they're all gung-ho. They think they know what they want to do, but they really have no experience with it, and so you've got to really hold their hand through the process, and it would be so easy to do things that would not be in their best interest. You know, you could charge more. There are two or three ways that a mortgage broker could take advantage of somebody like that. And so they would be clueless. They would not even know you could close the deal, and they would think that everything's fine. And so for those people, you just have to guide them through the process, give them your best counsel. Hopefully they listen to what you have to say. And then they'll close, and they'll learn the next time around. It takes, you know, owning commercial real estate is truly a learning process. And some people start off with a duplex and go to a fourplex and then go to a larger plex, and they gain their experience that way. And that's fine. That's good. And then some people all of a sudden have a ton of money that they want to invest, and so they put it in something, and they really don't know what they're doing, but they just know they need a place to park their excess cash, and they've got a substantial sum of it. So they buy a fairly large property. And if they don't put themselves with a bunch of good surround themselves with a good set of counselors, a listing or a broker, a real estate broker that can represent them well, a mortgage broker, an insurance agent, title person, an attorney that does commercial real estate transactions, they can get into a lot of trouble.
So, Doug, I get the four distinct client breakdown. I mean, the wise client's clearly the experienced one. The wicked's the one that's willing to kind of cheat the corners. The simple one is the one that doesn't know but is willing to listen to counsel. And then the client who doesn't know that just is in over their heads.
I mean, right.
They're over their skis. So my question, my first thought is, how does this play out on the other side of the table? How do you see, or do you see, the providers of services? Do you see that there are those people that are willing to do anything to make the buck? The ones that are more wise and willing to counsel their clients. Do you see the simple, maybe the newbie provider? Or the one that just shouldn't even be in commercial real estate?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And so when I end my thinking process on here is which I want to talk to people today, and I want to say, which client are you? Okay. In reality, most of us, most of my clients, are a combination of two or more of these traits. And what I would tell them to do, I would tell my clients to do an honest self-assessment. And once you can honestly admit to yourself who you are, then find the commercial real estate advisor who will work best with your personality bent. So what I mean by that is, if you have a tendency under stress to cut ethical corners, well, find someone who will keep you on the straight and narrow. Because there'll be some people out there that will keep you on the straight and narrow, and then the others will just let you do whatever you want to do. And if you have a tendency to be blustery and you really like to hire somebody that's just going to agree with you, don't hire a yes man. Hire somebody that will tell you what you need to hear, regardless of whether you want to hear it. And if you believe you're in over your head, find the advisor who will believe in you and will always be looking out for your best interest and not his own. So that's how I would... If I were listening to this today, that's how the advice that I would give to those who own commercial real estate.
Integrity.
Yes.
I think those are words that it's a word that has value that goes way beyond what you can measure in a bank account. It's just the individual and the practice and the honesty and all that. So I would agree. For a minute there, I started thinking about some of the political conversations going on, in today's climate here, and how you could match up the candidate. But we won't go there today.
That's very wise.
Yeah. So, but Doug, I appreciate you taking a minute here to break this down, and like always, want to make sure that the listeners know how to get a hold of you. If you could go ahead and give your contact information and. And we'll list it in the show notes there, but go ahead and give the best way for somebody to reach you.
Yes, there's really two ways that you can reach me. One is by phone, 503-614-1808. That's 503-614-1808. And you can also go to my website at www.marshallcf.com and check out the website. And finally, I guess, is that you can just email me at doug@marshallcf.com.
I hope that made you think a little bit. One of the things that made me think about is how can I recognize those people that don't want to work with me sooner so that I can make myself more available for those who do? Just my little takeaway from that. And hope you had... you enjoyed that and it made you think a little bit. I encourage you to check out Doug Marshall's site. He's at marshallcf.com for more information. We know you're busy and we thank you for making time for us today. We appreciate you and just want you to know that. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.